Welcome to this Monday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and let's hope tonight's Vikings game doesn't keep us up as late as last night's Buffalo Bills comeback did. But today we've got a good show for you. Coming in the second half today, it's Dessa. She's coming to Minot State University this week. She's a Minneapolis-based rapper, singer, and writer. She's known for blending sharp lyricism with genre-crossing music, and we'll hear some of her music and look forward to that interview. Today on Main Street, we're pleased to be joined by Don Flaherty, the mayor of Ellendale, North Dakota, and also Dickey County's Tax Equalization Director. Mayor Flaherty has been at the center of big changes in this small town of just over 1,000 people, leading efforts to annex a massive new Applied Digital AI data center, working to bring in new housing and helping Ellendale navigate the opportunities and challenges of growth. He's been a strong voice for rural revitalization, arguing that towns like his need more than agriculture to survive and thrive. And we'll hear about his path to public service, what Ellendale means to him, and his vision for the future. Mayor, you're driving in North Dakota this morning. It's great that you've had a chance to join us. Thanks for joining us on Main Street.
You're very welcome, Craig. I appreciate you taking the time to help me to share with you some of the views and think about the struggles as well as the successes that we are seeing right now.
What inspired you to run for mayor?
Well, I was originally had run for mayor in 2010 and was elected mayor, served from 2010 to 2014. I lost a very close re-election bid to a local person. I am not an Ellendale native. As of right now, I've only lived there 29 years, so I became a citizen 4 years ago in that small town. And so I lost that re-election. After a couple of years, they had an opening on the council, and I was asked to fill that opening, so I was appointed to fill that, ran for re-election for that council position, was also elected a council president at that time, and then in November of 21, the mayor, who was actually the person who had defeated me two elections prior, decided that they needed to resign, and so I became the acting mayor, and then in 22 decided to run for mayor again.
So what made you make that decision? What is it about Dickey County and with Ellendale that made you want to serve?
Ellendale has grown and become, it truly is my home. Just to give you a quick background on myself, I was born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I went to Minneapolis where I attended college, also in the Twin Cities, met my wife, and that's where we started our family. And then in Labor Day weekend of 96, we came out to Ellendale, North Dakota. I was actually came on as an employee for Trinity Bible College, which is located there in Ellendale, North Dakota. Served as their director of financial aid until the end of 2008. And then in the beginning of 2009, took the present real job position that I have, which is the director of tax equalization for Dickey County. I wanted to become mayor, or I wanted to be involved in the city in that way, because I care about the community. I think it's important that you give back to what the community has given you. The community has given us incredible things. When we moved there, my two oldest children were 3 and 1 at the time. So all four of my kids got raised in Ellendale Public School, which for a small rural school was one of the best I've ever encountered or seen. I was incredibly impressed by that, and that I could have a life with my kids that they could experience the things that I did growing up, which was being able to be outside and not have to worry about something happening to them. Being able to live in a safe community. You know, a lot of rural communities, people don't lock their doors at night. I will admit the city never left me from that. You know, we always locked our door at night. We still lock our door at night just because that's habit and that's the way that we've always done it in our household, but just knowing that there's the security there, just knowing that there are people who want to help each other, who care about each other, and those sorts of things, that's what, to me, is important as far as community, and I wanted to be able to get back to that in another way. And just as a side note, Craig, besides those two hats that I already wear, I'm also a volunteer at Van CMG with our ambulance service. I've done that since 2002. And that's also been extremely rewarding as well.
Mary, your main job is serving as Dickey County Tax Equalization Director. How does that complement or complicate your duties as mayor?
I think it helps me as mayor because I can have a stronger pulse on what is happening from a assessment valuation perspective in our town. You know, tax directors and assessors sometimes are seen as wearing the black hat, the bad guy, because, you know, they raised your value and they made your taxes go up and everything else. And but people don't fully realize and understand that we're one part of a two-piece component. We decide how the taxes are distributed among the public. It is actually the leadership of the political subdivision, the city council, the county commission, the school board, whoever it might be, that sets your mill rate and decides exactly what your taxes are going to be based on their budget. So yes, we can make your taxes change, but we don't really change your taxes as much as the political leaders do. So by being in both of those positions, it helps me to be able to balance and make sure that our government as a city is being responsible because of the changes that are happening in the dynamic in our town, because of valuation changes, because of sales and all of those sorts of things.
Mayor, what was your opinion of the 3% cap on property taxes that now the North Dakota legislature has implemented?
Well, I think the entire legislation of 1176 taken as a whole is a very good start towards property tax reform. That is something that we do need in this state. It is something that I think our legislators are finally starting to take very seriously. I will tell you that I don't think 1176 is perfect. I think it still has some growing to do, and we will see that in the next two legislative sessions, at least, in my opinion, as they continue to tweak it, continue to make it better, continue to make it stronger. So I want to say that, first of all, because I do believe that that is, we're getting on the right track, especially when it came to the primary residence credit and the increase of that from $500 to $1,600. I think that was extremely important and extremely a good thing that the legislature put through. With regards to the 3% cap, okay, this is not going to sound fair to everybody, but right now, in our budgeting process, we are on track, I believe, to not have to use the 3% increase. Part of that is due to what's happening around us, so we're fortunate in that manner, because we have seen a large increase in our sales tax revenue, and I think we're going to be able to use that to fill the gaps that we might have and not have to necessarily tap into any reserves, but also not have to step into and use the 3% cap at those 3% increase that we're allowed to do at this moment in time and bank that for the future. And so that makes me feel good. One of the things that I think is important about the 3% cap and 1176, and this is something that was very important for our community, and I will say hesitantly that I'm glad that it happened, is that I think it's going to force political subdivisions, and it forced us as a political subdivision to really look closely at not only our budget, but also our surpluses that we might have. Were those surpluses appropriate or not? And what is the reason for them? You know, things of that nature, so that we can be better stewards of the money that the public allows us to spend through property tax levies to service them in the best way possible.
Mayor, how would you describe Ellendale to someone who's not familiar with your community? What's your identity, your character?
Okay, do you want the real answer or you want the fun answer or do you want both?
Let's have both, Mayor.
Okay, so the fun answer is we are the gateway to South America because U.S. Highway 281, after it gets through Texas and hits Mexico, still travels all the way down to the tip of Argentina. So we think that's a strong selling point because we think people will know that when they come to Ellendale, they're going to experience the warm weather and the joy of South America as part of their living and being here in Ellendale. The real answer is Ellendale is a wonderful small community. Located where we are, 5 miles north of the South Dakota border on U.S. Highway 281, we're a strategic place for North Dakota. We are a welcoming community because people will first, we'll be the first thing that people see when they come in from the south, but we are also an exit community that wants to make sure we leave people with a positive thought of North Dakota when they decide or have to leave for whatever reason and they're going they're going south on 281. So those are the things that are important. And that's the things that I like about Ellendale. Is Ellendale a perfect community? Absolutely not. Like any community, we have our struggles, we have our difficulties. Things are not always the best that they can be. We're going through some of those struggles right now in many different facets and many different ways. But we are a community that I believe personally wants to continue to grow and be better. And when I say grow, prior to what's happening with the events right now with Apply Digital, I mean grow as far as a culture and as far as a group of people who are together, not necessarily looking at numbers as much as looking at character and development and being a place that people can feel welcome to and things of that nature. Now, Apply Digital has come into our neighborhood and become a part of our city. You know, we are going to see, I believe, growth as far as population too, and that is a bigger blessing because I want to see Ellendale last for a long, long time. But barring that, and understand when I got elected mayor in 2022, much less was the acting mayor for the 9 months before that, you know, that wasn't something that was on the horizon. That wasn't something that we thought could happen. You know, that was just trying to make Ellendale, again, a better community. And that's, again, why I serve in public life, why I am a volunteer in other areas in our community, because I want to see Ellendale continue to grow and continue to be a better, stronger community. And that's what I think I see in our community. And that's what I've felt the whole time that I've lived there. And that's why I call that my home now and not someplace in Minneapolis or someplace in Milwaukee. Ellendale is my home.
We're enjoying our conversation with Mayor Don Flaherty, the mayor of Ellendale, North Dakota. Mayor, in 1980, you had almost 2,000 folks living in Ellendale. You're closer to 1,000 now. Where are you going to be population-wise in 5 years, in 10 years?
If things continue the way that they do, I believe that we could see a 300 to 500-person population growth over the next 5 years. And that's a minimal estimate right now in my mind. There's so many moving parts and so many things that's really hard to say. You know, again, we need people that want to take a chance on Ellendale. We have land that surrounds the city that I think could be reasonably ripe for development in regards to housing and things of that nature. I think that there are some people who need to, hopefully are listening to this, will say, you know what? I want to take a chance on Ellendale because I think it's going to pay off and I want to make an investment in this community. And not only helps them, but it helps us. So I do think that we could grow it in those fashions, and it would be a wonderful thing.
Mayor, you attended meetings recently in Harwood relative to an Applied Digital data center that is planned for that area, but you've went through this process already. In fact, you led a decision-making process behind annexing Applied Digital into Ellendale. Walk me through that decision, Mayor.
So first of all, please understand that our situation, though kind of similar to Harwood's, is very different as well. The city did not actively apply Digital's data center location into the city limits. Applied Digital approached us and requested annexation into the city. They're the ones who figured out the map on how it could be done. They're the ones who initiated the process and everything else. And the only reason why I say that is that I think that's extremely important for people to understand because of our situation being very different than Harwood's. You know, in Harwood's situation being so close to the city of Fargo, Harwood has to do or be a little bit more proactive if they want to continue to survive and thrive as a community. And so the steps that they started to take at their meeting this past week, I believe, are steps that they're doing to help preserve their community and to help make their community bigger and stronger. In Ellendale's case, I really believe that one of the main reasons that Applied Digital approached the city about annexation was that Applied Digital wants to see their employees live in Ellendale. And I don't think it would be a very good optic if Applied Digital says to this employee who's coming in from California or Texas or Colorado or Pennsylvania or wherever they're coming from and saying to them, hey, we want you to live in Ellendale. We want you to be a part of that community. And yet we're not a part of that community. And I think that was one of the reasons why they took that step to be a part of the city of Ellendale.
Mayor, how do residents feel about folks coming to the community? And I ask that from the perspective of my history in Wyoming, when not everyone wanted folks from the states that you mentioned to come to our state. Rather, we're fine here. We're doing it on our own. How have folks received new members of your community?
I think that for the most part, the majority of people in the city, as well as people, a good number of people that surround Ellendale in Ellendale Township and the other township areas that are right near Ellendale, see this as a positive thing because they know that this is going to help strengthen our community and help our community to thrive. You had cited that in 1980, the population was about 2,000. When I moved there in 96, the population was approximately 1,750. It's now roughly 1,100. We've lost roughly 600 people in 30 years. That's 20 people a year. Now, about 10 of those 20, probably because of the age of our community to a point, was probably people who passed away and died, you know, that normal attrition. But if you don't have other people coming in to fill those spaces, you're going to continue to decline. Ellendale as a community back in 2021, not to be overly blunt and not to be mean, was a dying community, like so many other rural, small communities in our nation, not just North Dakota, but in our nation, because that's what's happening. The technological advances that are happening with regards to farming, that it allows a farmer to plant a lot more crops and get a lot better yields and everything else than what they used to even 20, 30 years ago, is going to continue to be something that is going to hurt small towns because you don't have as many reasons to have as many people available and that sort of thing in those types of situations. Parents, to a small part, you know, encouraged their kids in the 80s and early 90s, hey, get out of town, get an education, get a job that's going to be well-paying, you know, so that you can have a strong family, so you can have the American dream, so you can have all those things that I want to see you have, because I want you to have a better life than what I've had. Now, I wasn't saying that they didn't like farming or they didn't like the farm life, but to a small point, they recognized that they wanted the best for their children. Well, now, with what's happening with Applied Digital coming into our community and providing the types of jobs that you don't find in rural America every single day, that is going to help make things stronger again, because now younger families that have lived here, that the husband or the wife that grew up in Ellendale that now has that degree that can use that technology work or whatever else to get a job with Applied Digital or the client that they have using their facility, that gives them an incentive to move back. And again, that will help strengthen our community, make it stronger, make it better. And those are the things that are the positive. And I think that's what a lot of people see. Now, do we still have people that don't like it? Absolutely. You know, I've had a couple people say, you're ruining Ellendale, because I loved Ellendale the way it was, because it was such a wonderful place, and now it's you're going to change it. Well, I hated to surprise them, but change was happening whether I did something or whether Applied Digital came or not. Either you're growing or you're dying. That's the way it is. There's no middle ground. There is no Ellendale will just stay the same that it is all that time. You know, Ellendale is going to change, just like any other small town is going to change. Harwood is going to change. Fargo changes. Bismarck changes. These things are always happening. So be involved in that dynamic and try to make sure that it's going in a positive direction so that your community can continue to thrive, not only now, but years into the future.
Applied Digital is up and running, Mayor, in Ellendale, but they're not done. They're expanding. Give us the lay of the land.
I'm going to give you a history of their development in Ellendale. I think that's going to help to explain a few things. They came to Ellendale in the summer of 2022. That's when they purchased their first 40-acre piece of land. That was to build their blockchain facility, which is the second blockchain facility that they built in the state of North Dakota. The first one was just outside of Jamestown. The Jamestown facility was a 100-megawatt facility. The Ellendale facility is a 180-megawatt facility. So we're approximately twice the size of the Jamestown facility. They built that facility. It went online. It started operations in May, June-ish of 2023. And that is the place that's operational right now. that was what we thought was all that was going to really happen in Ellendale, to be quite frank with you at that time, because we didn't think that there would be any reason that they would do anything beyond that or anything greater than that as things were happening. That was just a belief. That was a belief that I had as the mayor or whatever else. That facility provided about 35 local jobs, because that those types of jobs were all jobs that did not need any advanced degree. Any person could have gotten a job doing the work that they need to do and to be trained on what they needed to do. It was not something sophisticated from a technological standpoint or anything like that that affected that type of job and what a person was going to do. So then in 2023, they purchased another 80 acres of land and started construction that fall by laying just pilings for the current three-story AI data center that they are nearing completion right now. That is not online yet. That won't go online, from what I understand, until about October of this year, when that will finally go online and be operational. And now they started about 6 weeks ago construction on their second high-functioning data center. That data center and another one that is planned to be exactly the same as that one are very similar to the ones that are going to be proposed built in Harwood area.
Mayor, your challenges have been, you talked about those earlier as we wrap up our conversation today. If you were to tell me now in the next 3 or 4 years in Ellendale what your biggest challenges will be, how would you respond?
The challenges we've already faced are challenges that we're still going to have. Housing is extremely important. Finding, again, getting more housing available because of the influx of people that we're going to see. Right now, we have a temporary influx because we have laborers who are working on the site who are living in Ellendale. When that construction is done, those houses will sell, so those will reopen up. But we're still going to need other housing if each of these AI data centers are going to employ approximately 100 to 125 people each. And that 100 to 125 people each, most of those jobs have to come from the outside, because in Dickey County, we maybe have 3 people who could do that job right now from a technological standpoint. So we're still going to need more housing. We're still going to need more development. Obviously, another concern is daycare. That's something that we worked at with the city. We do see that there's a solution that has come out of that, although not necessarily the way we originally thought, but it's still a solution that's going to be very positive. We had someone in the community that stepped up to move forward with that privately, and that's really encouraged, because we do want to see private businesses thrive and develop in Ellendale. So those things are important. And they're in the process now of getting that established and set up, and I think that's going to be a wonderful thing for our community. We have the concerns of other things that you have in a small rural town that we've been trying to work through and deal with. You know, worries about crime, which has not increased in any weird, considerable way, dealing with the influx of people. In fact, that is something that I talk regularly with our chief of police as well as the county sheriff. And both of them said that, yes, there's been a little bit of increase in crime, but that's more because of the number of people, not because we've had more incidences out of the usual and everything else. And so far, everything has still been very much in the norm of the type of crime that we are seeing. So that's a relief, because, you know, people were fearful that this would become like the western part of the state with some of the rough things that were happening out there because of the oil boom. We're not experiencing those negatives from that perspective. And that's been a good thing and a strong thing and a wonderful thing to be able to see and to be able to tell people that express a worry about that. Other challenges that we're going to see, I believe, is just continuing to integrate people into our community. You know, they're going to bring fresh ideas, new ideas, sometimes ideas we're not always going to agree with. And I have no problem with that, because everybody doesn't agree on something. So you've got to be able to have those outside experiences to help you grow and learn. But in that same light, we have to share with them our experiences, our culture, our beliefs in what is happening around us, so that they can grow in a different way too and become, again, a part of our community to make our community stronger and those sorts of things. Right now, a big problem we have too, in a sense, is traffic, just because of all of the trucks that are bringing in materials for the construction. and things of that nature, and construction workers who don't live in Ellendale who are coming in from all the surrounding community areas on a daily basis. So those are still challenges that we're going to have. But again, those are growing pain challenges. Those are challenges we're going to see that over the next 5-6 years will obviously trickle off and completely fade away, and then we'll be a little bit quieter of a town, which I don't want us to be too quiet because I want people to see us and notice us and everything else. But I do believe that these types of things are the things that we're going to still face as challenges. Taking care of things, making things better, being receptive to what the public has, but also helping the public to understand, for those that don't seem to get it, this is the future. This is going to happen either in Ellendale or somewhere else. And they can say, well, I'd rather have it happen somewhere else. Well, then 20 years from now, you wouldn't have an Ellendale anymore. So at least now, I believe we're going to have an Ellendale well into the next century. And that makes me, again, happy and excited to be a part of that, because I get to see what can happen. And I can say I was a part of it, not from a boastful standpoint, but from a community pride standpoint, because I cared about my community enough and I had enough vision to be able to say, this is a good thing. Let's continue to foster it. Let's help it to grow. Let's be partners with it so that it grows in a way that we're also happy with and have had an influence on. And together we're better.
My guest this morning, as he's driving across South Central North Dakota, is Mayor Don Flaherty. He's the mayor of Ellendale. Mayor, it has been a pleasure. Drive safe. We had a chance to visit here on this Saturday morning, and I'm deeply grateful. Thank you so much for joining us on Main Street.
You're very welcome, Craig. And I want to thank you again for taking the time. You know, there's been a lot of news organizations that have reached out because of what's happening, and most of them just care about the data center. I'm glad to see that you are taking the approach and thinking about the community, because truthfully, that's the important aspect of all of this. The data center or whatever business would come into a small town to help invigorate it, that's the dressing, that's the frosting on the cake, so to speak. But you're getting at the real meat of what needs to go on, and I do appreciate you taking the time to do that.
It's been a pleasure, Mayor. Thank you. Up next on Main Street, it's Dessa, and she's coming to Minot. She's a Minneapolis-based rapper, singer, songwriter, and she's known for blending sharp lyricism with genre-crossing music. Stay with us.
The Bush Foundation is accepting applications for the 2026 Bush Fellowship, September 2nd through October 7th until noon central. The Bush Fellowship invests in people and their capacity to do more good for the region. Bush Fellows are committed to leading equitably to create large-scale change. Up to 30 leaders from any sector receive $150,000 to support their self-designed leadership plan. More information can be found online at bushfoundation.org.
Don't be shy, I already like you. Don't care what you drive, I'm attracted to the IQ. Not my style to make a first move. Haven't felt this type of way since maybe high school. Sealed with a kiss, signed with an EpiPen. You gotta tolerate some risk if you wanna make a margin. Wanna make a friend, we can live a little larger. Split the dividends. Wheels up, let's go. Already missed too much to take this thing too slow.
Welcome back to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Main Street continues today with Dessa. She's a singer, rapper, writer, and thinker whose career has consistently defied categories. She first gained national attention as part of the hip-hop collective Doomtree, and since then she's built a wide-ranging solo career, 4 acclaimed studio albums, collaborations with the Minnesota Orchestra, a feature on the Hamilton mixtape, and book essays, My Own Devices, that was named one of NPR's best reads of the year. And she's also hosted the BBC and APM podcast Deeply Human. Dessa, it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Main Street. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You are going to be at Minot State University on Thursday, September 18th and Friday, September 19th. You'll be doing a couple workshops and a concert. We're going to get to that in just a little bit, Dessa. I want to talk with you as we begin about your early life and your path to music. You studied philosophy at the University of Minnesota. To me, those two can go together, but they don't often do, but they did for you. Give me your history.
Yeah, you know, I liked singing when I was a little kid, but my mom had a beautiful, like, knockout Whitney Houston kind of voice. And so I erroneously presumed, like, oh, man, if I'm not even the best at my own address. It seems like unlikely that I'm going to be able to, like, you know, make this work vocationally. And, you know, later, much later when I got older, I realized, like, oh, my mom could have totally been a professional singer. And obviously there's a lot of ways into the musical career. It's not just for Whitney-esque voices, you know? And so my career, I think, has been, it started as a lyricist primarily. You know, I had an interest in metaphor. I had an interest in story craft. You know, I liked that stuff since I was little in school. And so for me, the background in philosophy, I think in part I was attracted to philosophy because it prompted all of these unlikely questions. It was like, oh, there's a name for people who sit and wonder about stuff or who try to figure out the nature of the universe. And that counts, like, as a gig. I loved that. And then also, I think I was attracted because so many philosophers, in their task of explaining really complicated ideas, they rely, understandably, really heavily on metaphor to explain what they're talking about. And so I think some of the theorists that I was most attracted to might not have initially enthralled me because of their theory, but because of how good they were with a pen. You know, they were just really sharp, Bertrand Russell, et cetera, like really sharp writers. And so I think there's an overlap there in, like, the world of metaphor and figurative language.
You have Midwestern heritage. You have Puerto Rican heritage. I assume those cultural roots, too, really have shaped your voice as an artist?
I think so. You know, it's like I grew up in Minnesota, and my mom was from New York. She grew up in the Bronx, and she's a Puerto Rican one, spoiler. And I grew up in Minnesota without too many connections, to be honest, other than my mother's family to the Latin community. But it's interesting. So you don't really know, or I didn't know, I guess, in real time, like what was Latin, what was Puerto Rican, and what was just my mom, you know? And so in learning more about the world and getting a better kind of estimate on what that Venn diagram might look like, I think a lot of the similarities that I have with my mother, yeah, they do trace back to those roots. The way that we dance for no reason, the way that we sing all the time, you know, the little pet names that she'd use for me, you know, mommy or baba or something like that, that might not have been used in the houses next door. The lullabies that she sang to me, which had, well, one in particular was called Año Nonando, and it had these, like, really, I don't have a lot of music theory, but it had these really kind of interesting scales, you know, a melody that sounds, at least to my ear, kind of arabesque. And I think probably comes from, you know, Sephardic tradition many, many generations ago. And all of that, of course, I just knew as Ma, or later, you know, as Sylvia, but in fact, I think is connected to that heritage, yeah.
Your musical career, do you see yourself as a musician? Do you see yourself as a lyricist, as a writer? Is there one word that establishes who Dessa is?
I think a lot of us probably wear a lot of names, you know, as we move through the rooms of our lives. You're a son, or you're a dad, or you're a brother, or you're a member of a union, you know, or you're the guy who makes the banging potato salad at the potluck, depending on who you're in. I think for me, also I belatedly shout out to my dad who played, like, classical lute and guitar music for the Western side of the tradition, you know, Bach and Paganini, although I still don't know the names of the pieces he played. I think those harmonies and melodies were in my ear. I think I don't have a single word that I can deploy, but I think if a phrase is permitted, I think most things that happen under the auspices of language arts interest me. You know what I mean? So, like, a play that's really well written, a TV show that's really well written, a monologue or a poem, a greeting card, a conversation overheard on the train. Like, anytime language is used skillfully, I really dig it. And that's everybody from, like, you know, Nathaniel Hawthorne to, like, you know, Lauryn Hill.
When did you first start performing musically as a thing in public in front of folks?
I don't think this counts, but I remember at my, like, eighth grade graduation singing, what was it? Like a song by Madonna. This is all a cappella. So could a listener follow any of the melodies? You would have to take a broad survey. But it was like Boys to Men goes into Madonna, like a medley. Professionally, I think I started later than most, like, pop acts. Again, it seemed so unlikely to to work, you know? And I think I was also probably self-conscious about harboring a dream that adults might think was silly or juvenile. I didn't like that feeling of being humored. So I wasn't sure exactly what to do with, like, you know, the seedling of a musical mind and a lyricist, but I didn't have that that Broadway or that, you know, the voice. And to be honest, I think my voice has improved very mightily over the years. But in the beginning, I wasn't exactly sure what to do. I remember wanting to be a philosopher, but I wasn't sure where they were hiring, you know.
Do you enjoy working solo when you sing? Would you rather be part of a group?
Ooh, I love voices and harmony. So if I can persuade a vocalist to join me, or even better, maybe two or three, I often do. Budget, of course, is a limiting factor there. It doesn't always allow it. But yeah, I'm such a sucker for vocal harmonies. So as a lyricist, I think I'm most comfortable still working alone. Although I think some of that is like, there are some muscles I would serve to exercise more as a collaborator. You know, I'm a better collaborator, I think, like across genres and disciplines. So it's easier for me to work with a guitarist than it is another writer. It's easier for me to work with a neuroscientist than it is sometimes another writer. So yeah, I would say that I collaborate with joy, but also I can't remember from whom I'm borrowing the line, but I am a control enthusiast when it comes to lyrics.
We're enjoying our conversation with Dessa. Her work has been widely recognized, from Billboard charting albums and an NPR Best Read book to collaborations with the Minnesota Orchestra and even a feature on the Hamilton mixtape. She's going to be at Minot State University's No Stock celebration. Thursday, Dessa, you begin your day at 11 o'clock. You're going to have a workshop. Then you're going to have a concert later that evening. Tell me about why Minot State University. How did you guys hook up?
Yeah, you know, I was excited to see a request come through from Minot, and I really enjoyed doing academic residencies, you know, working with college-aged writers, lyricists, musicians, even just like sharing some of the entrepreneurial insights, or maybe it's just like hard-earned lessons of managing a touring musician's career. I like sharing that. I get excited doing it, you know, writing a song, performing a song, but I also love chatting craft. And so, yeah, having the opportunity to do that on campus was a pretty easy yes. So I think during the course of the 2 days that I'm on campus, I'll be speaking about the music part and about performance, and also about creative writing more generally.
Tell me about your concert. If we go at 7:30, that's on the campus of Minot State University, part of Knotstock, what are we going to hear?
Okay. In concert, I will be joined by my colleagues and phenomenally talented bandmates, Aviva Jay, who is a phenomenal vocalist and plays a harp. So she'll be arriving to Minot with, I think, a 26-string little harp in the overhead compartment of her flight. And Joshua Williams, who is my musical director, you know, so he helps with the arrangements live. And he is a joy to watch on stage. He's X Factor vibes. You know, I often look to my right and am just by the side of him emoting. He plays keys. He plays some sax in my set too. And is a vocalist as well. So the three of us will be putting on a show that'll range from really stripped down, you know, like tender story songs and ballads, all the way up to like sweat through your clothes rap bangers. So it's a pretty wide-ranging musical set. Yeah.
How do you keep your creative spark alive? You've been at this now for a while, Dessa. What motivates you?
Yeah, certainly it doesn't feel like inspiration strikes from above every day. I think sometimes, like a lot of musicians, every once in a while, like a firm deadline, you're just slogging, you're delaying, you're procrastinating. And somehow that approaching fear of failure strikes a little fire in your mind for something that might work. I think one of the biggest discoveries of my kind of mid-career has been that sometimes really good work happens because it has to. And I always thought maybe you'd be able to tell. Like, oh, this one was born of just absolute pure unfettered fascination, and this one was born of a deadline. And it's not always true. Sometimes great work happens under duress. But also, I think for for my strengths and weaknesses and all considered, like I'm a pretty curious person. I want to know how stuff works. I like talking to people, you know? So if I'm seated next to like an amicable, chatty physicist or botanist or somebody who paints bridges, like I want to know how that happens. And I think that kind of curiosity, it sort of like fills the well from which metaphor and story work can later be drawn.
So we've talked about your career in music, in writing, and in broadcasting. Is there any artistic frontier that you would still like to explore?
So many. Yeah. I mean, I think, if I had time to like take a year off and see if I could, you know, like become a really great salsa dancer, I would do that. But I think right now, a lot of my interests do exist kind of in an intersection of technical research and big artistic philosophical ideas. I'm working on a project right now that involves lucid dreaming. That's when you know you're dreaming, you know, and you sometimes can control your environment and the many ways in which people try to induce that state in their sleeping life. So I'm working on an artistic project.
Is this like a theater work then?
You know, I'm going to be delivering part of this like as a monologue that will kind of flow in between the songs that I'll perform with the Minnesota Orchestra in November on the 7th and 8th. You know, in the past, I've tried to work up sort of like a narrative scaffolding, you know, on which the musical material sits. And so that's what I'm working up now.
As we kind of wind up our conversation, Dessa, and you're going to be visiting with, I assume, musicians and writers. Do you think in this world of connectivity, this world where we all need our gratification this instant, is it getting harder or easier for people who can be connected to a lot of folks right away to do what they want to do in this world of connectivity?
I think the answer is yes. It is phenomenally easy to connect to people, to reach out and, you know, with a few minutes online to see like what's up in Nigeria, like what's up in Lagos, like what is their film scene like? What is like, you know, the underground hip hop scene like in London? That's cool. However, I think the same forces sometimes that enables that connectivity makes it difficult how to figure out how to do it vocationally. Meaning, in short, services like Spotify are an amazing way to find music. You know, my library and my tastes have been expanded, I hope, at least on occasion, by discovering something cool there. On the other hand, it's really hard to get paid by Spotify as a creator. So I think we are very much in the process of trying to thread that needle.
What's in your immediate future then? You've talked about a performance upcoming with the Minnesota Orchestra. What else is out there for you?
Oh, okay. So in my immediate future, I am starting to write lighting cues for that show. So much work to do, and I'm trying to keep my cortisol levels down. I'm also working on a collection of poetry, which is something that I kind of often do, you know, quietly and in the background of other big projects. And I've got some new music coming out at the start of November. So stay tuned.
We'll look forward to that. We've been joined today on Main Street by Dessa. She'll be performing and working with students at Minot State University as part of their annual Knotstock celebration on Thursday, September 18th. She has a workshop scheduled at 11 o'clock. And then she also has a concert that evening. And then Friday, she'll also be working with students again. And that is at 2 p.m. You can get more information on Minot State University's website. Dessa, it has been a pleasure. Thank you for spending time with us today on Main Street.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'll also just say that if people do want to check out the tour dates or the information, they can find me at Dessa on Instagram or DessaWander.com.
Dessa, thank you again.
Thank you. The other side puts kids in danger. Don't matter what they're arguing, that's what they always say. Front of the parade, girls spins a baton. And leader conducts with the corn and the cob. The new sound is everybody out on the lawn. Composed for French horn, cash register. Cause it's a hurricane party.
Support for Bray Public is provided by Bill Dean, Realtor with Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate Alliance Group of Bismarck, helping families reach their dreams throughout the Bismarck-Mandan area. More information at BillDeanHomes.com.
This is Dakota Datebook for September 8th. Why did the chicken cross the road? The answer has always been considered humorous in an odd sort of way. To get to the other side. This old joke has been amusing folks for nearly 200 years, especially little kids, though maybe not so much for grown-ups. It was on this date in 1904 that one of the first North Dakota newspaper references to the question appeared in the Langdon Courier Democrat in connection with a politician spinning humorous tales. The gag is often called a form of anti-humor, where the listener expects a punchline but instead gets a literal answer, to get to the other side. Most sources trace the U.S. version of the joke to Knickerbocker Magazine, March of 1847. The wording, "Why does a chicken cross the street?" Because it wants to get to the other side. It was presented as a conundrum, a confusing or difficult question that later morphed into a joke, often with a pun or riddle involved. But oddly, the chicken joke has exactly zero puns. The idea is clear with examples like, why does a fireman wear red suspenders? To hold up his pants. Or more modern twists, what did the man say when he couldn't find his truck? Where's my truck? And what do you call a homing pigeon that can't find its way home? A pigeon. Historically, the chicken joke showed up in minstrel shows, then vaudeville, and never really disappeared. North Dakota had its own versions. In 1941, why does a chicken cross the road? Under modern traffic conditions, it never gets to the other side. And later, the turkey got involved. Why did the turkey cross the road? It was the chicken's day off. And from schoolyards, why did the chicken cross the playground? To get to the other slide. And if you're wondering how old chicken jokes really are, consider this one, possibly known as the oldest joke. What time of day was Adam born? The answer, just before Eve. As the old humorist O.B. Joyful used to say, some jokes never grow old. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Steve Hoffbeck. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota. Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota. Support for Prairie Public is provided by Starian Bank, determined to provide smart banking solutions with innovative checking accounts and personal banking tools that match your lifestyle. Starian, taking you farther. Learn more at StarianBank.com.
This is Bird Note. Perhaps as much as any man, Henry David Thoreau enjoyed his walks in the woods. In June 1853, Thoreau wrote in his journal of an enchanting encounter with the wood thrush. The wood thrush launches forth his evening strains from the midst of the pines. I admire the moderation of this master. There is nothing tumultuous in his song. He launches forth one strain with all his heart and life and soul, of pure and unmatchable melody. And then he pauses and gives the hearer and himself time to digest this, and then another, and another. About a week later, Thoreau wrote again of the wood thrush, "This is the only bird whose note affects me like music. It lifts and exhilarates me. It is inspiring. It changes all hours to an eternal morning." Wood thrushes thrive in large expanses of forest, and their numbers have declined as forests have been cut on their breeding grounds and where they winter, in southern Mexico and Central America. Yet nearly half of wood thrush pairs have two broods per nesting season, so given a chance, their numbers could rebound. Protected areas like Adirondack Park, Great Smoky Mountains National Park, and Ozark National Forest give them that chance. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And that's it for this edition of Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us today. Tomorrow on the show, Dr. Lance Ritchie. He's just releasing a 3-volume biography of North Dakota native Lawrence Welk. It's titled Champaign Times, Lawrence Welk and His American Century. We'll look forward to visiting with the author and seeing you again tomorrow, right back here on Main Street.
Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the upper 40s to the mid 50s. Partly cloudy tomorrow on Tuesday, highs in the mid 70s to lower 80s. And mostly clear tomorrow night, lows in the upper 40s to the mid 50s. That's your weather from member-supported Prairie Public. Coming up next hour, All Things Considered.